We are the mothers of many, Kiara Evans and Lorna Blanchard. As mothers of many children, we are curious about our parenting journeys. We were called to document this poignant time of mothering in our lives. We feel passionately that women's stories should be heard.
Yeah. The shit show that is nighttime parenting. The absolutely god-awful part of parenting that is nighttime parenting.
The part that no one prepares you for about parenting.
Yeah, beyond, oh, there might be some sleepless nights when your baby is tiny.
I don't even remember hearing that when I was pregnant. Maybe I did, but it didn't go in. I don't even remember anyone saying, you probably won't sleep very much when you've had a baby. No one said that to me.
I think I thought it was just going to be a wake up, a quick feed, and then lay them back down and go straight to sleep. And it would be fine. I could cope with that.
Yeah, that sounds good. Did you get one of them?
It wasn't that. No.
Some people get that.
Do they?
I think there's some babies that sleep like really well from the beginning. And they do sleep like long periods of time at night. I have heard of that phenomenon. It's not been my experience.
Okay, so I'd really love to know what does your nighttime look like now? Because I think it's fair to say that probably, although those babies are in existence, most people know that like the baby phase is atrocious, asleep. But yeah. What I think would be really a helpful conversation to have, or an honest conversation to have, is beyond the baby side of things, what happens next? And is it better? How do you cope? Yeah. How much sleep are you getting these days?
Yeah, because I think people think past a certain age, kids just start sleeping through the night at some point.
Yeah.
And that is also not my experience. It is my experience with like a couple of my kids. So my night times at the moment look like bedtime routine starts at about 5:30 after dinner with baths and sometimes baths, depending on who'll go in the bath. And then like settling down time, which usually isn't very settled, but we're working on it. And then my littlest ones will tend to go to sleep. So I do bedtime with 4 on my own. The 2 little ones, I do like whack-a-mole with them, like try and put one in bed because they're all in their own rooms at the moment. Oh god,
amazing.
It's just trying to explain my bed to you. Have we got over an hour for this one bit? Okay, no, I'll make it quick. So they're all in their own rooms, but the littlest one is in like a tiny little office room basically, but it works because they tried sharing and we shared for a really long time and then they all decided that they wanted their own space, and actually right now it's working well, so we're going to keep going with that. The only time it's difficult is if they're all in different rooms and you're trying to get them to sleep. So I put the toddler in bed, I tell the 5-year-old that I will be there when the toddler's asleep and she has to sit in her room and do something quiet. She normally comes in 20 times while I'm trying to settle the toddler, and that takes like twice as long. If she just left me alone, the toddler would go to sleep. And then I tend to go and do her next and sit with her. So I sit with all of mine while they fall asleep, not the big ones anymore, but the 2 little ones. And so then I sit with the 5-year-old while she goes to sleep. By this point, it's about 8:00. Then I go in and I spend my quality time with the 2 big ones. Most of the time, the second one's already fallen asleep at this point because she's so bored waiting for me, and the eldest one is waiting for me with eyes wide open of like, what are we gonna do now, mummy? Like, is this where we connect? I'm like, yeah. And then about 8:30 I fall into bed, and then I go to sleep about 9, try and stay awake to watch TV, but I can't, so I go to bed about 9. And then the toddler wakes up about 12:00 and gets into bed with me. And at that point, my husband leaves. And then the 5-year-old gets up, normally just after her, and she joins me in the bed. So there's the 3 of us in one bed and my husband in the 5-year-old's room. That's it. And then it's about 5 a.m. and we all start again.
God.
That's my... And it feels... When you say it like that, it feels epic. And some mornings it feels epic. And then other mornings I'm like, oh, that was a good night.
Yeah. Do you sleep better when you can just like let them all come into your bed and just not worry about it?
Yes, absolutely. I sleep through them coming into my bed sometimes, and they wake Gary up and not me. So I know I must subconsciously know they've got in, but I don't wake up. And then in the morning I look around, I'm like, oh, you two got in last night. That's cool. But I don't always wake up when they get in. Those are the good nights. But the nights when it's just one of them in, that's quite nice. And he sometimes stays in with us, but we've always worked it to preserve as much sleep as possible for the majority of people. So that's the way we've kind of like navigated it. So how can we get the optimum amount of sleep for everybody involved? That tends to be that they want to sleep with me, especially Willow, but like the third one. But sometimes the toddler will go with Gary and then I'll stay with just Willow. So just depends. But it's shifted over the years as well. I feel like I got more and more relaxed, and now there's like zero boundaries about where you can sleep. It's all just a like case of as long as you are asleep. I think my one major boundary is that they all start the night in their own bed. So I get that like breathing space for a second once they're all asleep. Other than that, they're allowed to sleep where they want past that point when they wake up. So yeah, what about good. You? Sorry, that was very long. What's your
And I will say, just before I say mine, and you said it sounds epic, it is epic. And I think that's so worth, like you said to me in a message yesterday, mum's dealing with the whole of the rest of the day while still parenting through the night. Like, you said you slept, you're on a good night, you're sleeping through them coming into your bedroom, but your night's still disturbed. And you're then like your presence is still parenting those children all night long, and you've had to sit with all of them and deal with all four beings whilst they go to sleep. Like I just think it's really massive, and I don't think parents give themselves enough like pats on the back for just dealing with getting another human being to go to sleep. Just requires a lot. For me, it requires a lot. Just think it is epic. My bedtime, we used to have much more of a bedtime routine. We do not have much of a bedtime routine now because my children are so, like the older ones are so much older. Bedtime is so freaking late. So yeah, the evening is like long-winded. Dinner is 5:30. Then it's dog walk with whoever we can get to go out on a dog walk. Then it's... like you said, chill out time. That's not really chill out time. And normally at about 7:45, Bethany and Anna go through this mental, like they just do something stupid at like just before Anna needs to go upstairs to get ready for bed, they just wind each other up. And I every single night, and I'm just like, oh, must send them upstairs before this happens. Anyway, so 8 o'clock is meant to be Anna goes to bed, which is so much later than any of the others went to bed when they were Anna's age, but it is what it is. So then I do bedtime with Anna because Anna still requires a long drawn out protracted bedtime, which is her wandering around the house, brushing her teeth, asking me how long she needs to brush her teeth for. Getting her into pajamas is also stressful. Getting her onto the pillow is stressful. She's just Anna, right? She's just particular about all these things, the particular pajamas that she wears. Anyway, it's fine. Then we read a story, which at the moment we're reading Folk of the Faraway Tree together, which is actually lovely and completely random. And then she likes to tick off her day on the calendar. She likes to write her name or what we've done, right? And then she chooses her cuddly toys. All this is so much, so protracted, isn't it, with her? She likes her fan on. Then she puts her meditation on. And then I have to either sit with her, is her ideal, or pop in and out is her other ideal. Like if I say to her, I'm going to do some washing now, and then I pop in and out with all the washing, which means taking like one sock into her bedroom at a time to like pop in and out, and she likes me to rub her head. On a good night, she falls asleep within one meditation cycle. On a bad night, the other night it was like 3 or 4, and it didn't take until 10 o'clock anyway. And then during that time, similar to how yours do, Willow does when you're putting Autumn to bed, Bethany will come in and be like, are you done now? Is she asleep? And I'm like, no, she's not asleep. But Bethany likes to do something with me afterwards. So then I come downstairs at whatever, 8:30 on a good night, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock on a bad night. and the others are still up. So Bethany likes to play cards or do something. She likes some quality time with me. The boys are probably gaming, sometimes with CJ. Luke has got into the habit of needing a bowl of cereal at about 9:30 at night. Don't know why. We just let Luke do what he wants with food because he's very intuitive. So he does that. Ideally, the others go to bed at 9:30, but they never do. And Bethany is so long-winded to like get herself ready to bed. It's normally like probably 10:30 by the time she's finally in bed. But they all seem to be getting enough sleep.
I mean, when you say things like 10:30 to me, I get like slight palpitations.
Yeah, so I'm normally, if I don't have anything else going on, as in I don't have any work to do or anything that I'm specifically needing to do that night, I will generally at some point, probably about 9:30, when I'm like, guys, I'm done parenting now, I'll sit on the sofa, finally get a spot on the sofa because enough people have cleared away. And I just, there's a shelf next to where I sit on the sofa, and I just rest my head on the shelf and I just fall asleep, like sat bolt upright with my head on this shelf. And they all laugh at me. The other night, Bethany went, oh, did you see that? We were watching Michael McIntyre all together. I say we, I clearly didn't, I fell asleep. And she went, oh, did you see the funny bit about Northern Irish accents? And I was like, no. And so then CJ made me rewind it last night. He's like, oh, watch that bit. And it was like 10 minutes in. And I was like, okay, I didn't see very much. So yeah, and then I go to bed whenever. It seems to be I go to bed at like 10:20 is normal time for me to go and put bread on for the next morning. Because then I put the bread cycle on for 7 hours, 40 minutes. And then my alarm goes off at 6. So I can take the bread out, take the dog out, put Anna's currently eating fish for breakfast, so put Anna's fish in the oven, and then take the dog out, and then be ready to, yeah, everyone to start the day. Honestly, it's so ridiculous, isn't it? And then during the night, thankfully the three big ones are pretty good now. There is hope. Three big ones pretty good. Samuel sometimes wakes up with a nightmare, so he's currently got God love Samuel, he's currently got, I made him for Christmas, a set of like 10 cards of things to do in the middle of the night if you wake up with having a nightmare, because it was really stressing him out. So it goes through like a set of steps that he should do. So he has those by his bed, and then he has some orange oil. He uses orange oil every night, and he's got a pillow spray, and he's used a lot. Like, we bought him in a whole set of supplies for Christmas. He's used so much. So that's what he does as he goes to sleep, because he gets bad dreams. But Anna will generally come in and wake me up, and she just stands next to my bed and taps me and goes, I've had a bad dream. I'm like, okay, what do you want me to do? I need you to come in with me. So I just spend the rest of my night in her bed.
Single bed, right?
Yes, a single bed, but it's a bunk bed because Bethany's on the top. So if you move, like, the whole bed's shaking. And then Anna will go, stop airing on me, if I'm breathing on her. Or there's no room, move up. And I'm like, there's no, it's, I can leave. Would you like me to leave? No. Okay, you'd like me to what, lie on the floor? Yeah, that's fun.
And so you have all of your day, kids.
Sorry. She woke up one night last week when I'd gone into her bed at about 5. I think I woke up and I crept out of her bedroom. And the next day she said to me, I saw you leave, you wicked witch. Yeah.
God, you wicked witch.
Okay, I'm so sorry. Yeah.
Oh, wow. So all of your kids had such a long wind down time for bed. Or is this an Anna specific?
I think this is Anna specific, but CJ will point out, I think probably, that the reason why none of the others had it, Samuel did to a little bit. So he was the youngest for 3 years before Anna came along. So he did have me sit with him for quite a long time. But when the others were little, because they were all so little, so close together, their protracted bedtime was all at the same time. So I would sit with all of them. I remember one time between Luke and Bethany's bed, because in our old house, they shared a bedroom when they were very, very tiny. I literally had one arm in one cot and one arm in the other cot holding onto them.
Yeah.
But Anna's has gone to the longest. But then because there was always another baby coming along quite quickly, like the youngest, the second young, you know, the next youngest before the baby couldn't have a couldn't have me there because I had to go and feed the baby or whatever. So and I think Anna's just milking the fact that she's the youngest, and she's Anna, she needs these things.
Yeah. It does, like, I still, even now when I really talk about it and think about it, it does make me feel very anxious nighttime, bedtime. It has done since the beginning. I remember when Ivy was first born, like, it really was the thing that I struggled with the most out of every single thing of mothering a newborn for the first time. And just that sheer exhaustion, but also the fact that it was relentless, that it's every single night. And we're talking, like, these bedtimes that we've just discussed are when everyone's well. Like, we haven't factored in the fact that sometimes people are not well, which in a house of six people is quite often. So then that's disrupted anyway. Like, you know, because everything changes then. It's that, like, for me, it's, I still, if I hear any noises in the night that sound like a child walking down the corridor, that's when my whole heart rate, I can feel my entire body go on, like, edge and goosebumps, because I'm like, I'm waiting for the vomit. I'm waiting for someone to go, I don't feel very well. Because that's when you're in the depths of sleep, when it's like 11, 12, actually, no, maybe that's my depths of sleep. My like heaviest sleep time still is around 11 to 1 a.m. And like, if I hear anyone get up at that time and it sounds like they're ill, I'm like, no, it's too far till morning. You can't get ill now. Just like, get to like 4 a.m. because then I can get through the next day. But yeah, just the thought of being up all night, because like, anyone being poorly like that means you're up all night, doesn't it? And then, you know, there's no chance of a proper nap usually the next day, unless it's a weekend and they're like convenient enough to vomit on a Friday or whatever. At least then there's normally two of you. Depending on your situation. But for me, like, nighttime, still, if I think about it, or if I go back to like how it was back then, I still feel anxious about it. It's probably the thing I feel most anxious about as a parent. And when I was pregnant, every time, the thing that gave me sleepless nights when I was pregnant, of how are you going to do this again, having another baby? I do always think it's amazing that I had four children, because isn't, like, that's why mothering is amazing. Because even though I was laying there with sleepless nights pregnant with like my fourth child, thinking, how am I going to get through this having a baby who doesn't sleep well through the night? But then you still do it again even though it's really scary and really hard. But I would say that my I think my third one was the worst sleeper. 100% the worst. She's quite like Anna in lots of ways, I think, with the needing the lots of things. What she really needs is to just purely sleep with me still. Like, I know that would be her ideal, would be like she just sleeps in my bed, and she would sleep really well and so would I. But that hasn't, like, co-sleeping works for us with boundaries. That's the way it has worked for the majority of us. And that's always the hard thing, isn't it? When there's a big family that you're trying to meet six people's needs, and ultimately you cannot meet every single need exactly right all of the time. And one of the things that isn't being met is that she needs to co-sleep, and Gary and I are not willing to co-sleep for the entirety of the night. So she's always had that's always been like a bit of a thing. But she just, as a baby, she just, like, even when we did co-sleep full-time as a baby, she just never slept well, and she just has been really, really bad. And it took a lot for me to be able to come to terms with the fact I was going to have another baby. But Autumn slept, like, I always joke, she's like the Wonder Weeks app baby. Like, if they wrote an app on a baby, it would have been her. Like, she did exactly what the Wonder Week said on exactly the same day. I never used the app, but I've just heard about it over the years. I'm like, oh yeah, she had a growth spurt that time and her sleep went bad, and then it went back to this and whatever. But like, she's two now. She still wakes up every single night. People don't talk about that.
No. And I think the other thing people don't talk about is the, how you get the children to sleep. I think that there's a lot of, I don't know, I sometimes feel almost shame when I'm kind of going, I've got to sit with Anna. And actually the nights where I can just go, oh, I'm just going to sit, like like Willow, like you were saying about Willow, actually Anna would be happy if I just co-slept, and would definitely be happy if I just sat with her and she and I could hold her hand or something, or put my hand on her back while she fell asleep. That would be Anna's preference. And on the nights where if I could just go, I'm just going to do that and forget all of the, I don't know, society's pressures or the shoulds and should nots of parenting, the fears that I'm letting the others down or the jobs that are piling up. If I could just do that, it would all be more peaceful. For sure.
So why do you, like, I've actually been talking about this today with somebody else this morning, but like the hours of 4 till, in my case, like 8 p.m. are still really hard. And that's a long period of the day, right? That's 4 hours every single day that are just relentlessly hard. And I think, is there something I'm not, like, is there something I can add in to make this less hard? Is it me? Like, is it my attitude towards it, which is, oh, it's the witching hour, so it's going to be shit. Like, literally going into every day going, oh, 4 p.m.'s coming, like, the world's going to kick off. Actually, I feel like now 3 of them are at school. It starts from the minute they get in from school. They're just tired and they're grumpy and they're hungry and whatever. So you do your dinner a bit earlier. Then you've got this, like, massive period of time between dinner and bed. And you're like, I remember when Ivy was tiny, at playgroups and stuff, I would long for the day of the people who had older kids that had something to do in the afternoon, where they were like, oh, I've got to go on the school run or whatever. I'd be like envious of them. Whereas now I'm like, I want to go back to the days where we had nothing, because the evenings were so much more peaceful then, because I kind of knew what I was dealing with. I mean, it was still like boring and hard and rubbish. And I'm like, how can I learn to love this chaos of like the 4 hours? There's got to be a way of making it more peaceful for me. And I think they're pretty peaceful, to be fair. Like, they're not bothered by it, but it's me. I can sense myself being resistant to the whole process every day.
What does that look like when you're saying resistant? Resistant to what?
Like,
what do they need that you're not wanting to do?
Well, I think sometimes it's the ignoring of their needs, right? Because you just don't want to do it. So like, I can sense when Willow's had enough, normally before everybody else. And if I just started bath time half an hour earlier and got her into bed half an hour earlier, but at that point, I don't want to a lot of the time because the others are happy. And in my house, wherever I go, 4 children go when it's only me here. So if I go upstairs to do bath time with Willow and Autumn, all of them will come upstairs. So then it's like a mass exodus. And, you know, and I might still have the dishwasher to load. And I have this thing about not wanting to go downstairs once I'm upstairs. It's just a mental block of like, once I'm up and that is it. I'm not going back down again. We take everything with us. And like, I get into bed as soon as all the kids are in bed because that is my time. And I'm just going to lay here, normally not even watching the TV, just staring at a blank TV for like 10 minutes just to calm down after doing the whole day. And like, yeah, maybe. But there's this like block of like, okay, well, if we all go up at 5:30 or 5, whatever time it is, upstairs, that means I can't go back downstairs again. I'm like, oh, all these rules I've been placed in my life that are like constraining me to this experience. But you're sort of like, you are confined in some ways to the biorhythm of the kids and the biorhythm of the day, which is that it gets dark early in England and it feels like bedtime at 5 p.m. to me and probably to the kids, but not wanting to put them to bed at 5 p.m. because it feels too early to, I don't know. You tell me, what do you think?
I think two conflicting things. I think the first one is almost the times when I feel like I can manage those sort of really stressful times are when I take a big deep breath and go, I'm in charge. I'm in control. And if that means today I've identified that someone needs to have a bath time early, I'm going to own that. And I need to put my phone down and I need to center myself and calm myself and go, we're doing bath time early. The other thing I will say is that the other times when I feel most chill about stuff is when I can go, fuck it. Let's just stop with the shoulds and the rules. And so, you know, I'm not putting, I think there was a time when we had a really strict bedtime routine and everyone was having a bath every night with the lavender and all the things. And then we'd have a lot, you know, and since as they get older, they don't need that long-winded bedtime routine. I'm like, I'm not certainly not bathing all four of it. You know, it's like, get in the shower and do it yourself. I'm not even turning the taps on, thank you very much. And so then our rules are less, because there bedtime can't start at 5 o'clock for us, because they're not going to bed until 10. Like, that's, so the evenings are just like, let's be more chill. And actually, I've had to really let go of stuff. And I think that possibly only comes with having slightly older children who can regulate themselves a bit more, in that I just kind of go, oh, well, if everyone's going to game and, or I want to, we want to play cards, or we want to do it, it almost allows sometimes for a bit more fun, because there aren't so many rules. We're not going, well, we have to go to bed at this time and we have to do these things. We're going, oh, it's 7:30. Let's play a game of poker. Like, you know, that's fun. So yeah, two conflicting things. One, be in control, or two, completely let it all go. I don't think there's a middle ground.
Maybe there is a middle ground. We just haven't, both of us haven't discovered it yet. Or maybe it is that flex thing of like, well, some days they need the, this is also where I come up against my own bullshit. So sometimes I'm like, I know that I'm both a very rigid person who likes routine, and I am also very flowy. I am two things. And some days I'm the flowy version of me, and other days I'm the rigid version of me that needs a routine. And then I look at the kids and I'm like, I can tell that some of you are like that as well. I can tell the ones of you that want the same thing every single day. And I can tell the ones of you that want me to say, oh, fuck it, let's just watch a film tonight and like snuggle in mummy's bed and forget the routine. And I know that those two things are happening. So I think part of me as well goes, oh, but when Autumn goes to school, it'll be different. Because then I'll have like all these hours in the day without kids. So I'll be really grateful to spend these like 6 hours with them. And in some ways, I'm sure, because I do miss the big ones and they're at school, like towards, not right now, because they've only just gone back. So it's quite nice to have like a little deep breath and, you know, have some relative peace around the place sometimes. But after they've been at school for like 6 weeks in a row, it's coming up to half term and you're kind of just missing spending that quality time together that you sometimes get when everyone's in the same place. And I think that evening time can be that, it, if you don't put too much expectation on it being that. Because I might have that like thought process in my head of like, oh, you're going to come home from school and we're going to do this and we're going to do that and it's going to be some lovely quality time together, and all it is like a bunch of very overtired human beings all trying to survive in one house without like killing each other. And actually that's not then what the intention was at all.
And I think when you said at the beginning, how can I learn to love this more, and the other thing I thought was, maybe you can't, and maybe that almost helps to like let the pressure go of, the reality is it is dark, the circadian rhythm of these kids is they're ready for some rest and some sleep, they've done a full day of school, they are completely overwhelmed and tired and unwilling to admit that. You are also tired because you've done a whole day that probably what starts at what, 4:30, 5 o'clock for you at the moment with what time Autumn gets up. You've had no rest time during the day because you're doing all the stuff that you need to do during the day. Then you're trying to be emotionally present to your kids and do all the other jobs that comes with the admin of four children or however many children you've got at home in that evening period, which requires, you know, the snack after school, the getting changed, the whatever clubs they need to do, the dinner, the tidying up from dinner, the getting, like there's so much admin, life admin to do in that period of time, as well as managing your own tiredness and your own hunger and your own need for rest, your own, I mean, for me, absolute overwhelm with the energy of these children, because when mine come out of school, they all, which is lovely, you know, I'll take it as a compliment, it's good, use me as their emotional dumping ground, all four of them, like full on, they vomit their all their stuff at me. And Anna and Samuel have come to an agreement on the way home from school that they both talk at me at the same time, because I can listen to two conversations at once. That's very over, and I can, because generally they're both complaining about someone at school, so it's fine. I can give them, you know, I can give them half an ear attention. But it's very overwhelming. Like as soon as your children come, it's so overwhelming. And then you're trying to deal with their overwhelm. And like everyone's overwhelmed and everyone's dysregulated. I don't know that there's a huge amount of time where we can say, oh, I'm learning to love this period of time. This is a really hard period of the day. It just is. It really, really is. And I've definitely found myself feeling real guilt that I don't love this more, that I'm not wanting to be more present. So, you know, if I'm feeling very dysregulated and not able to identify that I'm feeling dysregulated, I will know when I'm trying to, I'll try and numb the evening out. Gentle numbing might be scrolling on my phone. More extreme numbing might be I'm downing gin and tonics, or shouting at my children or whatever. But, and then I feel guilt because I'm like, well, they've been at school all day. I should be super present and super emotionally engaged with my children because they've been at school all day and I've not been with them all day. And yet the afternoon is so freaking overwhelming that kids, whoa. And then I just think, this isn't the way life was designed. We are one human being, and I'm very, very lucky. My husband gets home a whole lot earlier than yours. And so I do get help. It is so helpful when he's here. But in terms of the emotional regulation of the kids, that's on me, even when he's home, generally. Although he brings a very much a sense of calmness and like plays with boys and stuff, in particular gaming. But it's a lot. It's a lot, right?
Mm. That thing where you're saying about them coming out of school, I think I'm only just getting into that stage now because I've only just, so my third one has only just gone to school this year. And actually the three of them now being at school, and also my emotional connection to them has like massively changed over the last couple of years as well. So I'd say they're telling me more now than they were before because I've opened up more communication, like techniques between us. And also just we're more closely knit than we were before. Just like that's a whole nother episode. But like my relationship to them is far closer now. So I'm just now experiencing the older ones and now the third one doing that emotional dumping on me because I'm now their safe space. Whereas I do think I was their safe space to some extent before, but not to the extent I am now. And I'm like, holy moly. And like you say, you're stood there at the school gate and one comes out. Like the worst thing is people trying to talk to you while all this is happening. Like mums are trying to have conversations with me and all the kids are like shouting. I'm like, oh God, I can't talk to you.
Yeah,
this
is why I have no school gate friends because I can't. I have to be, no, sorry, my kids require this.
But sometimes I want to talk to the people that I'm talking to. So I'm like, I have to switch off my own like need because I've not seen adults all day maybe. So I'm like, right, switch off that need right now because you can't talk to that person. You've got to deal with like this. And the this is like three children all talking at once. And that is just so... And then the toddler's like running off at the same time and like she's run halfway down the street or whatever. And it's like that. No, I just didn't know that that is what happened. I didn't know. No, that's what our school was like.
Yeah, and then you're going, how could I learn to love this more? I know that for myself, I have to be really careful, and I'm not very good at this, but of making sure that my own physical needs are met. Otherwise, I start to lose my mind. As in, I know today, so today, Monday is my long run day, so I ran long this morning, which means I feel a little bit wibbly and I probably am going to need to eat before I go on the school run. Otherwise, me trying to listen to their needs whilst I'm just going, I'm going to pass out because I'm so hungry, I have to really be careful. And I think that's one way for me to learn to be okay with this period of time is I need to make sure that I have looked after myself. And if that means which sounds so ridiculous, I'm like, I need to make sure I have a snack before I go on the school run. But like, seriously, that is part of it. I need to make sure I've gone to the toilet, you know, really like the basics of life, so that I'm not dealing with their dysregulation and my physical dysregulation. Like those two things clashing are a really bad situation for me. So yeah,
I think that's why night times particularly, then this is why they are so hard, is because you're going into it depleted because you need to sleep. So like,
yes,
there's nothing
you need to sleep.
Like, yeah, you can't change that. You're starting the night needing to get rest, and you know full well that the rest you're going to get is not probably going to be enough to replenish you. Like that is just a fact. You can't change that in any way. until maybe they're old enough to regulate themselves at night eventually. So, and then you're probably going to be leaving people downstairs who need less sleep than you because they're young and you're getting on a bit, to like do whatever and hope that they can regulate themselves enough to go to bed at a decent time. Because I said to you the other day, didn't I, my plan for the teenage years is that I will leave the kids downstairs with Gary, because I cannot, like, even before I had children, I went to bed at 9 o'clock. I was a primary school teacher. The kids at school would take it out of me. The job took it out of me. I've always been someone who needs a lot of sleep. I've always been someone who wakes up quite early in the morning, not really early, but like early enough, like 6 a.m. is good. I can do 6, 7 is better, but you know, but I've always gone to bed before 10, always, even before children. So, you know, a good solid 8 or 9 hours is my body's optimum. And I know that. I know myself really well. In human design, I have an undefined root, and I know that has something to do with it. I also am a very, like, quite physical person, so I know I need to replenish myself with sleep. And everything is better if I'm well rested. And obviously, like, hormonally, I know there's certain times of the month where I need more sleep than others. Like when I'm bleeding, I absolutely need more sleep, and my body, whole body feels it. When I'm ovulating, I need a bit less. So, you know, like being woken up on those nights is more advantageous to the children, because I'm less likely to lose my shit in the middle of the night than if I'm like heavily bleeding with my period and someone disturbs you at like your night sweat point or whatever, you know. So like, it is, there's so many things all going on at nighttime, but the main thing is you're starting it on a deficit. And then unless you sleep well, that deficit doesn't end for the whole time you're parenting young kids.
Yes. And then I've been finding myself almost, as a grown-up, confused by my own, is it a good thing that we can push through the extreme sleep deprivation that we have? This deficit, which is now for us, like for me, you know, 13 years long of not good sleep. Is this a good thing? Is this, I don't know if it's a good thing. Am I so good at completely ignoring my own physical needs, my own need for sleep? I don't know, that you just kind of push through and you're like, oh, I've got to keep going. I don't know if it's a good thing or not. I'm guessing it's not a good thing.
And we've got nothing historically to really like sort of base that on anyway, because the generations before us, recent generations before us, just left us all to cry in our cots till we slept through the night. Generally, not everyone, but generally there was like the consensus of, well, babies should learn how to sleep through the night. So very quickly we were all taught how to be quiet at night, which obviously we know now can sometimes be shown in scientific evidence to have had some implications. You know, this is all very like non-scientific based conversation, but so we kind of don't want to do the cry it out, leave your baby to sleep through the night thing, because we all, like, generally people have read about that now and they're like, oh, it probably is a good idea to meet your baby's needs even at night. But there isn't really recent generations who've done that, so we don't know what effect that has, because past generations, we're talking like way, way back, where people slept in like probably all the same bed under one roof, that where they did everything in one room, probably got loads of sleep because the kids were in bed with them, you know. And like,
yeah, and I think the kids were in bed with them, and the community was bigger, and so there was other people to, you know, everyone's pitching in, sharing the load, that, you know. And then in years gone by, they weren't in friggin' schools where they're having to emotionally suppress all of their feelings to then dump all of their feelings on their poor unsuspecting mother at the end of the day. They weren't having to run to all the clubs in the world that everyone tried. I mean, we don't do many clubs, but even the one each that everyone does is sometimes too much. That wasn't in existence. You didn't have partners out until, I mean, what time does Gary get home? It's late, isn't it? Like, you really are on your own for the majority of your days. That it's really, really difficult, this modern parenting, isn't it?
And I think that's probably where the key is to like the more peaceful, you know, like evening routines, is to, where can I minimize what I'm doing Like, yeah. What am I doing out of societal expectation, and what am I doing out of like actual need?
Or I think, what am I not doing because of societal expectation? You know, if actually you can go, one of my kids needs me to sit with them, fuck it, I'm going to sit with them and stop beating myself up over it. But, you know, it's both and, isn't it? You know, add things in, take things away.
Yeah.
What's causing stress?
Yeah. And the things that like I can take away sometimes are really tiny. Mm-hmm. You know, like bathing every day, something I had to let go of with four kids. I used to be religious about that. Now I'm like, oh yeah, it's fine. You've gone 3 days without a bath, you'll be okay. You don't smell
yet. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Like, the older ones, like getting to the point where it's like, oh, sorry, you're gonna go in every day, love. Because you're getting to that age where you start to smell. But yeah, when they're really, really little, I'm like, oh, sometimes I just did it. Like, sometimes I do it for just like the activity because it's, oh, you know,
definitely.
Fun.
Yeah, I definitely, when mine were little, especially when it was three and under, and like before anybody went to school where there was like nothing to do all day long apart from entertaining these children, a bath time was an event. And that's why we did it every single day, because it was something to do for half an hour for mm-hmm. sure.
Yeah,
definitely. But then, yeah, what can you ditch? Or, yeah, I mean, for me, I know that the idea of coming downstairs at 9 o'clock at night, once I've done bedtime with Anna, or in years gone by, whoever it was that needed attention, to then come down and do the washing up would just destroy my soul and would eat into my, you know, I'd be stressed doing bedtime. So now the understanding is I get to do the, sounds so ridiculous. I get to do the washing up. We have dinner and I do the washing up because it needs doing. I cannot leave six people's worth of food sat, you know, plates and pots and pans and stuff sat on the side in the kitchen. I need to do that. That is something that has to be, I need to be allowed to do the washing up. And that was harder when you had a baby, but I generally then had a baby strapped to my back whilst I could wash up. So yeah, I think it's almost like going through the day, the evening, like, yeah, what's causing stress or what do you need to minimize stress?
Mm. Yeah,
not having four children.
Not an option. But yeah, I think I'm just thinking about like what I can minimize now. I'm fully in my zone of like running through my evening going, oh, what is there that I can take out that's going to make this less stressful? And like we were saying about the school admin, God, there's a lot of admin to do. There's a mm-hmm. lot of admin with four kids, isn't there? Like my toddler only goes to preschool one day a week. And even that day, I'm like, shit, like, I've got to get your lunch done. That's three lunches this morning because one will have a school dinner. Like, getting all the bag packed because they need like 20 things and they're at preschool. Then unpacking. It's the unpacking. So they come in, they dump their bag. And I'm like, do I need better boundaries around like you guys dealing with some of this stuff? But I don't. I'm trying to think back to my childhood about what admin I had. And I just don't remember. I guess my mum did it all. That's why I can't remember. But I wonder if like they can take some more responsibility for what they need to do. But I think probably because I'm so good at task-based doings that I've like probably done too much for certain points, which means those skills haven't developed.
It's difficult because I, having now, I think slightly older ones who are taking on some responsibility, it's really noticeable which ones have the same skill set that you just described. Like Bethany is immense. Like yesterday she was after something to do and I was like, oh, there's a kitchen cupboard that really, really needs sorting out. And even CJ opened the cupboard and went, wow, she's done a good job. Like she really did do a good job. And then I got told off for messing up the system, obviously, because this is not my area. But Luke is so, he just doesn't give a crap about any kind of responsibility. They've all got chores and they're all meant to do their chores. Bethany and Samuel will diligently do their chores with no, I don't need to ask them, never ever need to ask them. Samuel will come to me and tell me that he's done his chore. He will tell me what he needs, if he needs more supplies to be able to do his chore. Like he's awesome. Bethany, absolutely awesome. Both of them will always put their lunch boxes away, their bags away. They are on it. Luke, useless. Last night I literally hit the roof because I went to go and put some of the washing away whilst I was popping in and out for Anna's bedtime, and I opened his sock and pants drawer to put clean stuff in and found all of last week's socks, used socks, back in his drawer. And I was like, I wondered where all the damn socks were. I lost my mind. Like, that's his idea of doing stuff.
So what did he do? Do you make him wear the dirty socks?
No, the thing is, he wouldn't care. He would not care if he wore the dirty socks. So no, I just shouted at him and washed them. I don't know what else to do.
Do we let them wear the dirty socks? Like, do we let them just go?
But he wouldn't. The thing is, it wouldn't teach him a lesson because he wouldn't care.
Yeah.
He doesn't care either way.
Who's affected by the dirty socks? It's just everyone else having to smell him.
Yeah, ew. And the fact that you've ruined my washing system. I did all the socks. I paired all the socks. And I wondered where the hell they all were. And they were all in your drawer dirty. Ew. Yeah, he just doesn't care. But maybe that's... And then I was like, is that my fault for not instilling more responsibility in him? Is it because I'm making sure the girls are doing all the stuff and the boys don't? Well, no, because Samuel is on it. So I just wonder if it's personality types as well.
Yeah, I do get to thinking about that sometimes, about what they'll be like to live with as an adult. Because I'm like, I can definitely see how Willow will avoid any kind of chore so perfectly, brilliantly. Like, she is so good at, like, not doing the tidying up and not picking up her coat and not, like, putting her shoes back in the right place. She's so good at it. And I think, is that because I've allowed that? Or maybe it's a bit of both there. I didn't have as much time to teach her to do the things as I did with Ivy. And also, I was just probably a bit more strict with Ivy than I was with Willow. But then I'm in the kitchen with Fern and she's just so damn practical. She follows recipes. She can cook. She's like right there with me, like wanting to do the thing properly. And Ivy and Willow are just so away with the fairies half the time. They're in like their own imaginative land. And I'm just like, dudes, this is real. Come back.
Yeah. So,
but then I'm like, there's certain practical things that you need to be like functioning housemates, whether it be in a romantic relationship or just living with people, because at some point in your life, you're going to live with other people. And for the majority of your like young years, you have to live with me. And I don't want the bunch of people who take the piss.
Yeah, yeah. That's why I was so cross last night about the socks, because it felt like he was taking the piss out of me. Not that he would not have clean, but that there was no respect shown for the fact that I do all the washing, and there was no like gratitude for the fact that I do the washing. I think that's what got to me, and that's not what he meant. That was just the way I interpreted it. But I do think that is a thing, like learning to co-function with people. But then the other thing that plays in my mind is I also really love the idea of like the kids just treating this house as their resting place. They're like, I can relax now. And so if that means throwing the shoes and the socks and the bags down and just sort of being going, okay, chill, mum's gonna do it, or it doesn't matter, like part of me loves that. And I was thinking about it the other day when I think at one point like everyone's just going mom, like calling me, you know, Anna's so bad at calling, mom, can you get me, and I'll come into the land like, what does anybody need? And then it just really hit me. I was like, I don't remember doing that as a kid. I don't remember ever just kind of going mom and she would come. I don't remember that. And she had four kids, like I don't. And I was like, oh, actually I really want this. I want them to just go, mom, I need you. There's got to be a balance, hasn't there, between like absolutely nothing and I'm doing everything for you. But I really do want them to be able to go, mom, I've woken up in the night and I need you, or mom, I can you, you know, just I want them to know that I'm there. And I am grateful, but I would just like to not have dirty socks in the drawers. How do you get balance?
Well, I wouldn't describe it like that, but what I would like for the future of our family is for us all to work as a team to realize that at certain points people are more capable than others of doing the thing. So like that being able to read the situation and say, okay, today mummy is really tired, so I'm gonna like do my chores. And for me to sometimes go, oh, they're really tired, they need a break from their chores. Like being able to do the flow around each other of understanding that we're all at different places at different times and feeling different things, and not having this like constant it being on one person, whether it be the most responsible child or the most responsible like task-driven adult, and just more and like being aware of each other and each other's needs, But then I think to get to that point, they all need to learn how to be aware of their own needs, which is where the emotional load comes in, right? That's what we spend half our time doing. Like, what is it that your body's telling you you need right now? And for the most part, when they're tiny, that involves you having to then go and do something, because it's like, I'm hungry. Okay, well, mummy will go get your snack.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Actually, we had I had a big moment with Bethany the other day, which isn't that big, but felt big in the moment. But she is constantly like asking for permission over everything she eats. She needs me to give her permission for it. And I'm so sick of deciding how many people can eat what snack at whatever time. It just bores the hell out of me, and I don't want to do it. So I sat down with her and I was like, Bethany, you are of an age now where I'm going to invite you to trust yourself. I trust you. I don't need you to ask me permission anymore. I trust you to listen to your body. And if you need a snack, to check in with yourself what kind of snack you need, and you can go and do that. You have my full permission to trust yourself. And she was like, what? And I was like, if I notice over a few weeks that it's not quite working, or you're just eating all the chocolate, then maybe we'll have a conversation about it. But I trust you. Please stop asking me for permission for everything. You have the power. Which obviously she then bragged, because I was like, I'm not giving this permission to everyone else. Because that's the other thing that like, really pisses me off. And they go, well, he had this and she had this. And I go, oh, you don't all need the same thing. So then last night she goes to Samuel, mummy told me that she trusts me. And I was like, oh, Bethany. But it was good. So that was, maybe it comes, like the emotional regulation or the trusting them to do the things to regulate themselves is coming. Maybe, I don't know. I'm not very good at regulating it myself. It's hard, isn't it?
But that's like, I think that's a really important point though, that about the varying needs in a large family, and about the fact that kids then want to rub it in each other's faces about their particular need. This is always a bone of contention, right? So for like this Christmas holiday, I noted that my two middle ones and their dynamic, and there was very much like a level of resentment about what number three can do that number two is not necessarily encouraged to do. But it was like trying to explain that certain people need more rest and certain people need different foods to thrive because we're different people, and the fact that yes, that other person gets 10 snacks a day and you only get two, that's because you eat your three full meals a day and your two snacks, and that other person only eats the 10 snacks. So giving you 10 snacks and your three meals would make you very unhealthy, but for them, that's the way they eat. And like having to explain all this, because when we were kids, everyone just did the same thing, right? You ate your breakfast, lunch and dinner, and you went to bed at a certain time and you slept through, and that was it. So trying to navigate this where you're like, they've still got sibling dynamic, because let's not forget that siblings love to wind each other up. That's like their be all and end all of life some days.
Yeah.
Right? So you've got that dynamic. Plus you've got the dynamic of like, trust yourself to know what your body needs. So you're giving them this like quite a lot of responsibility quite young, but also then you're saying, but also be mindful of the fact that someone else is probably going to get better snacks than you. Or that they're going to need something different from you. And sometimes it's going to feel weird and like feel uncomfortable because you want that as well.
Yeah.
It's a lot of things you've got to discuss with these kids.
Yeah. And I think that conversation I find quite difficult, because I'm, when someone says to me, oh, but she had this thing, and I instantly want to go, yeah, but you've had whatever, whatever, whatever. And I'm like, oh God, how do I phrase this that doesn't completely minimize the feeling of jealousy or the feeling of it's not fair? Because I get it, like those are real feelings. That person does feel that sense of injustice. And my reaction is to defend my decisions very quickly. And I've been trying to be like, okay, I hear you. But how do you go, I hear you, but you're freaking wrong. Just stop pointing these things out. Like, just shut up, be chill about everything. Oh my God, kids. I mean, Anna's like, you know, bedtime. Well, why can't I stay up as long as the others? Like, because you take so long to go to sleep and I have to do all the things. You have to have more time. I promise I'll just go to sleep like the others. No, you won't.
And because also you're six. She's six, right? You're six. And they're like whatever age. And this is the other thing, is like, bedtime, so I'll be like, right, I'm taking the little ones up to bed, you two big ones can do whatever you want down here, like chill out, hang out. They're like, I don't like being downstairs by myself. I'm like, okay. But if you come up, then it means that you have to do bedtime, because it's the calm, quiet space where we do bedtime. Like, that is what is going to happen. And then it's like, I don't want to go to bed early. I'm like, no one said you had to go to bed early. You followed me up here. Stay downstairs. And I'll probably forget about you till about 8 o'clock and be like, oh shit, I'm going to put you to bed. Like, why? You know, like,
yeah.
It's just so, it's really difficult to sort of like, it is spreading yourself, isn't it, to all those different areas, whilst also explaining, because it, like, there's so little time in the day for explaining sometimes to me. I'm like, I have to do all these things because you all need all of these things. And then not only that, to get you to embody them as humans, I then have to explain them to you at an age appropriate level for you to understand what's going on. And that's always where I feel a bit like the over justification comes in. I can go very quick from like, right, we're going to bed, to I told you so. I told you you had to go to bed because you're behaving like this. It's like, okay. Like, there's a disconnect there between the intention, which is to meet your need of going to bed early, to me, like, just telling you have to do it without any explanation. But it's very hard sometimes to get to that point of, like, patient, calm explanation, which is always, like, if I'm on Instagram Reels, right, which me and you know that I have a very tricky relationship with them, and sometimes I'm on them and sometimes I'm not, but I have I get very addicted to looking at them. So if I see anything where people are gently explaining to their kids their actions, my instant reaction is like one of like, how have I got the time to do this? And then I go to like, imagine I did that with every decision throughout my entire day, we'd never get anything done. And then I'm like, oh, all of this, Lorna, is just you like not being kind to yourself.
Yeah, I definitely think so. And I think, so one person I follow on Instagram who I really love, and she does example videos like this, Mama Cusses, she's in America, and she's a big, like, gentle parenting person, but gentle parenting for reality. And she'll do a, like, comparison video of, this is what I thought gentle parenting was, and it's the long-winded, protracted, okay, my darling children, please don't, I think I watched one the other day, it was like, don't, I need you to find different places for your fingers that doesn't involve the Christmas tree. And then she would do, like, a reality of, hey, children I've birthed, stop touching the Christmas tree, otherwise it's going to fall over and I will not be putting it back up again. And she kind of explains it as both a gentle parenting, and the thing that's gentle parenting about her technique is that it's not shameful parenting. It's not like, you shitheads, you knocked the tree over, you've ruined Christmas for me, and I'm done. And I think that's something I try and remember when I'm having those moments of like, am I shaming my kids? Or am I just needing to communicate this thing quite quickly? And also remembering that I am probably dysregulated by now. And so when I'm snapping at these kids, because I'm dysregulated because it's really too late, or I'm hungry, or I need a wee, or I've got a headache, or it's just too much, sometimes that's going to happen. Okay.
That's like me every night then when I get woken up in the night. So every single time I'm disturbed at night, I'm dysregulated because I freaking need 9 hours sleep.
Yeah.
So you're never gonna get like the good version of me. So then I'm like, does that mean that they're gonna be, so I know for a fact that my eldest avoids coming to see me in the night as much as possible, because I think she knows like how horrific it is to wake me up. So I know that she puts herself back to sleep because she's worried about waking me up. And then I'm like, what have I created? Is this bad for her? Like, I mean, she does. She tells me about it, so that makes me assume she's not in shame about it. Like, she says, "Oh, I woke up last night, but I know I shouldn't come and get you unless it's an emergency." So I put my Audible back on and like went back to sleep. I'm like, is that bad, or is that just her understanding that I have needs too? I don't know. Then are they suppressing themselves or not?
Okay, so I heard, I definitely hear what you're saying, because I find it difficult to hear it when Samuel says to me, I had a really bad dream, but I didn't want to come and wake you up. And I'm like, oh no. And yeah, I didn't want you to wake me up either. So yeah, I totally get that. And I read a wonderful thing in a new book I'm reading, and that there's a difference between suppression of feelings and containment of feelings. Mm-hmm. And that was like mind blowing for me, because I was like, when you're giving the children the tools to deal with their feelings, are you telling them basically to squash their feelings all down? That's my fear always, and it's going to bite us in the ass. And actually, what these tools are, so for your eldest, for Ivy to be able to put her audible back on and then communicate, I was thinking of you, mum, and I was able to put myself back to sleep. What she's learning to do is contain the feelings of, I've woken up and I need to put myself back to sleep. Like, that's not unreasonable for someone of her age to like be okay with putting themselves back to sleep. And I think the other thing that you should be kind to yourself about is the fact that if she really needed you in the night, she would come and get you. Of course she would. There is no way any one of your children, I know your children, none of them would suffer through the night if they really needed you. They just wouldn't. And so all you've done is teach Ivy, and she's expressing it in a way that's age appropriate for her, that yes, you do have needs, and she's okay to put herself back to sleep in her little containment of audible in her nice cozy bedroom. So yeah, go you.
Go me. All those nights of shouting at them at 3 a.m. have done really wonders.
Yeah, I would, into like that, the middle of the night thing, I've had to almost come up with like a script of what to say other than fuck off. Because that's my instinctive reaction is to like punch someone in the face and tell them to fuck off when I'm woken up from like deep sleep. And then my watch is saying to me in the morning, you didn't have very much deep sleep. I fucking know that.
Mine have been to like turn around to Gary and go, I can't do this every single night. Oh, I'm like, I can't do this. And
it's like,
just chill out. I'm like, I can't chill out. My whole body has told me I can't move right now.
Yeah, yeah. Your heart rate spikes, your adrenaline spikes, you're like, fuck, panic. Yeah, it's horrible. And so that's why I'm like, Anna, what do you need? Is what I'll ask her. What do you need? Is all I can allow myself to say, because otherwise I'll just say fuck off.
I just say, just get in then. Just get in.
Yeah. Okay, I'm coming. Or I'll just say, just go that way, Anna, I'm coming.
Yeah. Yeah. But there is a reason why sleep deprivation is used as a torture tool. Like, that is used across the world as a form of torture, because the way your body responds when you're disturbed from that kind of rest is so horrific that you would do anything in some instances to go back to sleep. I vividly remember watching a TV show absolutely years and years and years ago of people being sleep deprived and then filming it in like a Big Brother-esque type thing. And I think I was captivated by it because of my need for sleep. And I remember watching these people, like, I would not be able to do that, because like, to win the show, they then put them in a darkened room in a bed and told them to stay awake as long as possible after being sleep deprived for like a week. I'm like, I would have fallen asleep way before that. I would have found a cozy little corner in the room and just like curled up. But yeah, I mean, it's a torture tool. And then you're having to respond politely to someone who's torturing you.
Yeah. Or deal with the amount of shame and guilt that you then lump on yourself at 3 a.m. because you've just told a kid to fuck off.
Yeah.
Or probably your husband, which I definitely had unkind words with my husband in the middle of the night. Yeah, it's horrible.
Yeah. I've definitely told children to fuck off in one way or another in the night. And I've definitely told my husband to fuck off in the night, for sure. Yeah. But I think we're both now under the agreement, not me and the kids, because I should really explain it to them too. But I've definitely explained it to Gary that whatever I say between the hours of 11 p.m. and 5 a.m. are not me. They're just
this. Yeah. They were sleep deprived. Like, that's under, this is information gathered under duress of torture.
Yes, behind enemy lines.
Yeah, this cannot hold up in court as part of our divorce proceedings, okay? Yeah. Not that I'm getting divorced, husband, I'm joking.
Do you need to go? Oh yeah, I do probably need to go. Yeah. Just, oh shit, I really need to fucking go.
Okay,
shit.
All right, okay. Well, that's a good end to the podcast. Bye.
Oh my God. Okay, bye. I'm going to be so late. Okay, bye.
Oh no, bye. Love you, bye.
This week's little promo at the end. I think it's me. I think I'm meant to be doing this one. For me, for my book. So this week's episode was on nighttime parenting, and I just wanted to share with you, if you don't already know, I wrote a book last year. It's called Don't Call Me Silly, and it's really a perfect bedtime story, if I do say so myself, for children who are highly sensitive. So you heard me talk about Anna in the podcast episode. She's highly sensitive. She has lots of kind of little things that she needs to make her life run smoothly, and lots of things that kind of get to her, like shoes and socks and
bedtime, going to school. So I wrote a book inspired by her. Actually, it was kind of co-written by her. She came home from school one day and said that her teacher had called her silly for crying when I left. And so out came this story, which goes through the day, and each little bit of the day, there's a struggle. And then the little refrain of, don't call me silly, when someone says, oh, it's just socks, don't be so silly. Oh, it's just this, don't be so silly. And then the next day, we go through the day again and help Anna with all the different things. First of all, by identifying how she feels, and then by saying, you're not silly. And then at the very end, there's like a little bedtime routine using some essential oils. Anyway, that's my book. It's called Don't Call Me Silly. And you can buy it from me or from Amazon. And I'm so proud. I hope you love it. Thanks.